As we were reviewing one of Paul's statements and trying to understand one of the greatest deceptions and ever perpetrated on humankind is this idea that the Greek word ecclesia and the so-called Christian New Testament, which means ek is out and ecclesia is to call, so to call out is ecclesia. It was changed to church. So when I tell Christians, there is no word even remotely akin to church found anywhere in the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, or even in the so-called Christian New Testament. You know, they always look at you and say, oh, come on. It's, I mean, God has a church. I mean, he talks all about his church. Everything's about the church. And I said, no, there is no such thing. It's completely bogus. And they can't even process that information. But the fact is that the word which has been changed to church is ecclesia. Now, you have two choices with words in a foreign language. Greek is, you know, a foreign language. It's to an English translation. Your two choices are you can translate the word, you can transliterate the word. If it's the title of something, like it's the church or the ecclesia, then you have the option of transliterating the word and making it a title, like Caesar is a transliteration. The names are almost always transliterated. Titles are sometimes translated, sometimes transliterated. Emperor, for example, is translated, where Caesar is transliterated. So those are your choices. So in an English Bible, if they actually believed, if the publishers actually believed, and they don't, that that was the inerrant word of God and that it was inspired, then they would know that they have two options with the words in the text. They can transliterate them, they can translate them. Those are their only two options. They took Christo, for example, and they transliterated it as Christ. They viewed it as a title, they transliterated it. Ecclesia, they didn't do either. They didn't transliterate it. You don't ever read Ecclesia. And they didn't translate it. They replaced it. They replaced it with the name of a pagan goddess, church. And so what you get is a realization that in the Greek translations, they weren't so bold as to create a Christian entity like the Roman Catholic Church based upon a pagan goddess. Even they weren't so bold. Even Paul wasn't so bold. He spoke of called out, the ecclesia, the called out. Now, the called out makes perfect sense as a term, and this was that Paul said he was hunting down and murdering, destroying, annihilating the called out. When you realize that it's based upon the Hebrew verb kara. Yosha used the term kara. When he used kara, which is Hebrew meaning to call out, although we'll talk about its additional meanings and its richer connotations here in a moment. When Yosha spoke Hebrew to his Hebrew audience and used the term kara as a verb, to call out, it was translated into Greek as ecclesia, to call out. And so it should have been translated into English, to call out. But it wasn't. It was replaced with the name of a pagan goddess, church. So what was this group, this kara, this called out? Well, kara means to invite. Yahweh invites us to participate in the covenant. Yahweh invites us to meet with him seven times a year. Today happens to be the celebration of the eighth day, the celebration of eternally camping out with Yahweh of Sukkah. Yahweh invites us to those things. Yahweh invites us to be called out because he calls these invitations, these seven annual invitations to meet with him, which are mikre in the plural, mikra in the singular, which is based upon the verb kara, the same verb. He calls these invitations to be called out and to meet with him kodesh, which means they're set apart. So you're called out of the world and set apart unto Yahweh if you choose to participate in the covenant, if you answer the invitations to meet with God on these set apart days, because they set you apart from human institutions unto God and his family. When you understand set apart, for example, Yosha was twice set apart. He's kodesh kodesh. The Hebrew word for set apart is kodesh. There is no Hebrew word for holy. The spirit of Yahweh, which is set apart from him, is the Ruach Kodesh. Ruach is spirit. Kodesh is set apart. And so something is set apart from Yahweh, and most set apart, Kodesh Kodesh, in the case of Yosha, who's not only set apart from Yahweh, part of Yahweh, set apart from him, but also diminished from energy to corporeal, physical. All to help us become set apart from the world. So we're invited to be set apart via the set apart covenant, via the set apart Torah, via the set apart name, Yahweh, via the set apart invitations to meet with Yahweh. All of this causes us to be set apart from the world, Kodesh, by the set apart spirit on these set apart days. Called out of the world, set apart unto Yahweh. That's what Yosha was conveying here. But all of that was lost. All of the connection between Yosha saying, you know, upon the rock of the realization that he's the representative, the son of God, representing Yahweh, that he's going to build his mikre. Is what he said in his mikre, or Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, the seven invitations to meet with God. And yet by changing that from mikre to church, you have this mythical individual now named Jesus Christ, conceiving and building a religious institution as opposed to doing what he came to do, which was to fulfill and affirm the benefits associated with Pesach, Passover, matzah, unyeasted bread, Bukurim, firstborn children, and Shavuah, the power of seven, the promise of seven, all to facilitate the benefits of the covenant. And so you have an absolute, comprehensive and consistent affirmation of the Torah based upon Yosha's words and deeds, completely corrupted and altered by the religious community when they changed ecclesia from its Hebrew basis as mikra to church. That's how you got the religion. There are very few things that are more important to know if you're a Christian, that you have been completely hoodwinked by people who know, who have deliberately misled you regarding a church, that there is no such thing in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, or even in the Christian New Testament. That it's an invention of men, that is a pure corruption of the testimony for the express purpose of controlling individuals through a religious institution. That's why God hates religion. Goddamn religion. Despises religion. Because religious leaders are all hypocrites. They're all dishonest. They're all manipulative. They're all deceitful. They know the truth. And they lie through their teeth. And you, if you are a Christian, need to ask yourself, if they lied to you about the very existence of a church, what else did they lie to you about? If they lied to you about there being a Jesus when there was no person named Jesus, his name is Yosha, which is a powerfully important name. describing his purpose, that he was Yahweh saving us. What else they lied to you about? They lied to you about the Trinity. They lied to you about Sunday. They lied to you about Christmas. They lied to you about Easter. They lied to you about the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven. They lied to you about baptism. They lied to you about circumcision. They lied to you about the Torah. They lied to you about Yahweh's name. How many lies does your religion have to promote before you will stop promoting your religion? Is there no end to the lies? Are you willing to accept every deceitful proposition of a religion? No matter how many times they've lied to you about there being a church, about there being this thing called Christian, about there being a New Testament, about there being a Trinity, about Sunday worship, about there being a church. They've lied to you about all of it. And yet, billions of people don't give a damn. Now, I suspect that a large part of that is because religion is very good at being bad. That religion, because it's so integrated into a country's politics and culture, and has always been so. You look at Greece and Rome, for example, and Persia, the ancient civilizations, they were... Religion and politics in Egypt, for example, were inseparable, as was militarism. And it's not much difference in America today. Today, the national religion is political correctness, a socialist secular humanism. And in these communities, it's very difficult for people to think, even have the motivation to think rationally, to exercise good judgment. And so most people never bother to question any of this, and when confronted with the truth, can't process it. Most people, if they're Christians, and they hear me tell you that, tell them that there is no such thing as a church. There's no such thing as a Christian. There's no such thing as Jesus. There's no such thing as Christ. There's no such thing as the Trinity or Sunday worship or any of this. They get mad at me? Not at those who have lied to them. Yisrael, like Bereth. Yisrael means individuals who engage and endure with God. Bereth means family-oriented relationship. Ruach are all feminine. Ecclesia, which is a Greek translation of mikra, the verb, is feminine. And Yisrael and the covenant represent Yahweh's bride, at least symbolically. Before the divorce decree was announced through the prophet Hosea, based upon Yisrael's infidelity, the familial covenant relationship was a monogamous marriage vow between Yahweh and his chosen people. But when Yahweh's bride chose to cavort with the Lord, Baal in Hebrew, Yahweh announced a divorce, a split, which he promised to resolve on the day of reconciliations 2,000 years after he healed the rift with Yahusha's and the set-apart spirit's fulfillment of the first four mikra, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuot, which he did in year 4,000 Yah, nearly 2,000 years ago. Now, in so doing, Yahweh honored each of the five promises that he had made to his covenant children. You see, Pesach makes us immortal, resolves death. Matzah makes us perfect so that we can enter Yahweh's presence, resolving the penalty of separation. Bukurim causes us to be adopted into Yahweh's family, to become his sons and daughters, so we can inherit all that is his to give. And Shavuot, which is the promise of the Shabbat, enriches us with his teaching and guidance and empowers us with his spirit. Those are the five benefits of the covenant. and they were all enabled by Yahusha's fulfillment of the first four Mikra in year 4,000 Yah, 4,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa were exiled from the garden. Now, when you realize that Yahweh honored each of the five promises he had made to his covenant children, with our spiritual mother enriching and empowering the ecclesia, which was the called out, on the Shavuah, seven Sabbath celebration in year 4,000 Yah, we come to understand that the Mikra and Mikre plural tangibly demonstrate what Yahweh is trying to achieve, what he's offering. They are the path to him. They are the means to be called out of this world and to be called into God's home. It is a connection that Christians never acknowledge. They don't attend these invitations. They don't acknowledge the terms and conditions of the covenant. In fact, they have replaced the Torah's covenant, Yahweh's one and only covenant, with their New Testament, which is based on Pauline literature. Now, Sir Francis Bacon, who was the occultist that King Iams, as he was then known, most likely hired to shepherd his self-serving rendition of the so-called Christian New Testament, in addition to the politically savvy theologians who served with him, must have felt that since the opening verb in Galatians 1:13 was, "You heard," that they had the liberty to change wayward behavior to conversation. After all, they could be pretty sure that Paul wasn't going to object. And I suppose it sounded more racist to say the Jews' religion rather than Judaism, which explains that decision as well. But no matter what their justification may have been for copyediting what Shaul actually wrote, as a consequence of replacing ecclesia called out with church, the lone aspect of the message, which had any merit at all, was lost. And a devastating misnomer was born. While I have attempted to hold Paul himself accountable for the severe character flaws required to perpetrate savagery on innocent kin, he must also bear the burden of his legacy. His positioning of Judaism as a ruthless enemy of God's, put in quotes, church, has fanned the flames of racial hatred and caused horrible and needless suffering the world over for almost 2,000 years. Translations exacerbated the problem, to be sure. But it was Paul who presented Judaism as the enemy of his faith, Christianity. The foreseeable and inevitable consequence was to rally Christians to persecute Jews out of a misguided sense of divine retribution. This is a glaring red flag, a dire warning, a dead canary in the coal mine, which most have missed. Satan's religions almost ubiquitously engender a hatred for Yahweh's chosen people. The Torah reads, "For you are a set-apart people unto Yahweh your God. Yahweh your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a treasured possession above all of the peoples on the face of the earth," Devarim, Deuteronomy 7:6. God's love for his people is unmistakable, unshakable. But so is Paul's animosity, and therefore Christian animosity. But you look at religion of Christianity, which is adverse to Yahweh's chosen people, largely because of Paul. You look at Islam, which was adverse to Yahweh's chosen people because of Muhammad's hatred of the Jews in Yathrib. The two most popular religions in the world are both universally opposed to Yahweh's chosen people. And then you look at religions, the religions of man. The two most famous would be communism under Lenin and then Stalin, and Nazism under Hitler. Both resolutely anti-Semitic. Man's religions are almost always opposed to Yahweh's chosen people. It's one of the ways you can differentiate the things of God and the things of man. If you are a practitioner, if you're a faithful devotee of a religion, like Christianity, which is overtly opposed to Yahweh's chosen people, was born out of a hatred of Jews, remains hateful of Jews, or Islam, or the religions of political correctness, of the religions of man, then you ought to know that you're opposed to God, because God loves what you hate. God hates those who hates his chosen people, those he loves. I'm sorry, but it is that simple. Now, on this program, I advocate on behalf of Israel. I do so for two reasons. One is that those who oppose Israel are always despicable. You look at Hamas, you look at the Islamic State, you look at Iran, you look at Saudi Arabia, you look at Turkey. Those who oppose Israel are despicable. And Yahweh loves Israel. I guess there'd be a third reason, which is that Israel is the only sane, the only productive, the only civil place in the midst of the poison that is the Islamic world. But I have, as an individual, chosen, based upon an informed and rational review of Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, to recognize that Yahweh is God, that he proves that he's God, proves that he exists, proves that he authored his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And after this comprehensive and critical, rational, open-minded review of the evidence that he provides, I've decided that it is in my best interest, personally, as I can also tell you it's in yours, but that's a choice you have to make, to align your perspective with his. He is the creator of the universe. He's the author of life. His perspective is correct. His perspective works. His perspective is dependable. Reliable. There are every manner of benefits of aligning one's perspective with his. I've chosen to do so. So I've chosen to love what he loves. I've chosen to hate what he hates. I'm very comfortable in that position. And that's why I oppose religions like Christianity and Islam, and the religion of man that is promoted as political correctness in this country. I despise what God despises. I love what he loves. Now, the Babylonians and the Assyrians, the first practitioners of satanic sun god religious schemes, were especially savage towards the Jews, or more correctly, the Yahudim, meaning related to Yahweh. They plundered their towns, they hauled their people off to slavery. The Egyptians, who practiced the same religion but under different names, held the Israelites captive for 400 years. Again, changing the names but still practicing the same religion, the Seleucid Grecian Empire, which was created as a result of Alexander's conquests, ruthlessly sacked Jerusalem under Epiphanes, the manifestation, which means the manifestation of God, as described in the books of the Maccabees. which are historical books. The Romans, who worshiped the same gods, also under different names, were perhaps even more barbaric. Not perhaps, they were more barbaric in their treatment of Jews than were the Babylonians and the Assyrians. They razed Yahweh's home, salted Yehuda so that nothing would grow, then renamed the promised land Philistina, solely because the Torah presents the Philistines as Israel's most annoying enemy, from whence we get the myth of the Palestinian people. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you this, but the Philistines are known to us only because of the Torah prophets and Psalms. Without the Torah prophets and Psalms, there is no knowledge whatsoever of the Philistines. They left no legacy. They did not have a written language. They did not build cities that identify them as Philistines, as the distinct people. There is nothing that one could use to discern their name or their fate if it were not for the Torah prophets and Psalms. So if the Torah prophets and Psalms are true, then the Philistines cease to exist, conquered by the Assyrians 2,600 years ago. If the Torah prophets and Psalms are not true, then there were never a people known as the Philistines. They're unknown. And so, if the Torah prophets and Psalms are true, and Yahweh proves that they're true, then there cannot be a Palestinian people, nor a place called Palestine. And if the Torah prophets and Psalms aren't true, then there is no such thing as a Palestinian people or a place called Palestine. It's one of the rational conundrums that people don't want to deal with. It's because lies prevail. You can use the term Palestinian people and everybody knows who you're talking about, or they think they do. And if you say it's a myth, there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, there's no such place as Palestine, they think you're crazy. The truth is become that unpopular. Now, speaking of popularizing lies, Constantine's Christians, governed as they were by Pauline doctrine, were so anti-Jewish, observing any aspect of Yahweh's Torah became a crime punishable by death. Then came Islam, a religion born out of plundering, enslaving, raping, and murdering Jews en masse. But they were not alone. Such discrimination and lack of moral judgment lingered throughout the reign of Catholicism throughout Europe, facilitating the horrid treatment of Yahweh's chosen people under the dominion of the first socialist secular humanist regimes in Hitler's Germany and Stalin's Russia. The common denominator manifest in each of these religions, including the faith conceived by Paul, Christianity, is a ruthless animosity directed towards God's covenant and his covenant children, Israel, especially those who were naturally born, the Yehudim. It is Satan's trademark. It's why Yahweh predicted that the serpent would bruise the heel of man. Most people read that and don't have a clue. Do you know that the word Jacob, who became Israel, was renamed Israel by Yahweh, means to grab the heel? That's what Jacob means. Jacob became Israel. And so it is Satan who is trying to hold Israel back, trying to trip up Israel. The hallmark of everything that he does religiously. If you want to know a satanic religion, is it anti-Semitic? Christianity is. Islam is. Socialist secular humanism is. Those who advocate conspiracy theories, the vast preponderance of them, are anti-Semitic. Not all of them, but most of them. Be really careful. It's Satan's trademark. Paul's animosity towards God's children and his chosen people should have been seen as a red flag of monumental proportions, because Yahweh says to Abraham, speaking of the covenant, and particularly Yisrael. I mean, his grandson was Jacob, who became Yisrael, 12 tribes of Israel. He said, I will bless those who bless thee, and I will curse those who curse thee. Now, to explain the kind of arrogance that is the hallmark of the most grossly insecure individuals, Paul continued to brag. But rather than isolate his next statement from the previous one, let's join them, because one statement simply flows out of the other. And if you read these words, as you listen to these words, please note that the selection of the imperfect tense, which made Paul's last statement so indicting, so devastating, is manifest again in his follow-on comments, thereby conveying two things. First, Paul is suggesting that Judaism is the cause of his bloody rampage. And second, he is saying that he is still progressing in the religion, that he is still engaged in Judaism. All right, so when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break, we're going to reprise Galatians 1:13 and state for the first time Galatians 1:14, and then begin our commentary on it. Stay with us. For because indeed you heard of my wayward behavior in some time and place in the practice of Judaism, namely that because throughout showing superiority and surpassing any measure of restraint to an extraordinary degree, and better than anyone else, I was aggressively and intensely pursuing, hastily striving toward, persecuting, oppressing, and harassing the called out of God. I was and am devastating her, continuing to undermine, overthrow, and annihilate her. And so I was and continue to progress in the practice of Judaism. Over and beyond many contemporaries among my race, especially and excessively enthusiastic to belong to the traditions and teachings handed down by my forefathers. Wow. So he's not just saying that Judaism made him a mass murderer. He's saying that he continues to progress in Judaism, that he's accomplishing a great deal, that he's persisting in and moving forward, advancing in Judaism. This is eprokopto. It is a compound of pro before kopto, means a cutting, striking, and smiting, scribed in the perfect, where the writer is portraying the action as an ongoing process, which, while initiated in the past, is continuing to occur with no assessment of when, if ever, it will end. In the active voice, which signifies that the subject, Paul, is performing this action, and in the indicative mood, whereby the writer is saying that his assessments are genuine and that his accomplishments are real. So I was and I continue to progress, accomplishing a great deal and persisting, moving forward, advancing in the practice of Judaism. Over and beyond many contemporaries among my race, excessively, abundantly, to a greater degree, enthusiastic to belong to the traditions and teachings handed down by my forefathers. Of the things that Paul is celebrating here, Yahusha routinely denounced. The primary object of his scorn were the religious and political leaders in Israel, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes. The scribes were the government types. The bureaucrats were the scribes. The Sadducees would be liberal-minded political types. The Pharisees would be fundamentalist religious types. And he attacked them all, denouncing them, exposing them, condemning them, explaining why he viewed them as hypocrites, why he viewed them as immoral, why he saw them as counterproductive, corrupt. And yet Paul is saying, hey, man, I'm one of them. I'm not just one of them. I'm the best of them. I, beyond any of my race, I am especially good when it comes to being a practitioner of Judaism. Wow. And he's making it really clear here. The Judaism is the traditions and teachings handed down by his forefathers. So he's not talking about the Torah of Yahweh. He's not saying that he's Torah observant here, folks. He's saying that he's Talmud observant, the oral law. It's the traditions of the forefathers that he's adhering to. He is Talmud observant. He is claiming to be an aficionado of Pharisaic Judaism. He's a Pharisee. He's admitting that it is what is influencing him. Not the Torah of Yahweh, but Judaism. And this is one of the great misnomers of Christianity. The great deceptions of Christianity. Christianity wrongly infers that the covenant and its Torah and the Mikra, these invitations to meet with God, are Jewish. That they're an expression of Judaism, as is the Shabbat. But that's not true. They're Yahweh's. They have nothing to do with Judaism. Judaism is the traditions of the forefathers. The Torah is the word of God. Paul has chosen the tradition of his forefathers.